From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made on a perfect sunny day. That's what we have right now in Rochester and the Finger Lakes. It's a day that looks a lot like Sunday did, a lot like Saturday did, a little bit like Monday morning and Monday evening, not Monday afternoon, not the eclipse afternoon. And you can focus on that. You can think about a 96-hour period when we had maybe six not great hours for an eclipse, and that's where it happened. Some people are thinking about that, and that's fine. Yesterday morning, I really thought that would be me. I kind of woke up with a sense of melancholy, knowing that we likely were not going to see much sun. And you know what? That all changed when totality set in for me. I know that everyone's experience will be a bit different, and that is totally fine, of course. I was up on the roof of this building looking out at hundreds of people on rooftops of local bars, the brewery, businesses, apartment buildings, and parking garages. And when totality hit, it was like being at a spiritual, quiet, celestial service. And maybe 30 seconds into totality, I actively thought, and probably said this because we were broadcasting, I didn't even care if there were clouds. It actually made it more interesting and bizarre and beautiful. I was not prepared for how moving that would be, and it probably got me even more because I was down going into it. I was thinking, man, my family back in Cleveland's got sunny skies. It hit me hard, though. And this hour, we invite your recollections. The next time Rochester is going to be in the path of totality, 2144, 2144. So this was it. This was our moment, and I am certainly grateful for it. There is something surreal about the fact that it is over. And that if you want, you can go chase eclipses for years, but you will never see one in Rochester again with totality. And by the way, isn't it interesting? We are in an age of declining confidence in science, in expertise, in academia, and yet some of the biggest critics of those institutions are also now getting online to find out where the eclipses that have totality will be for the next century. I was just given a book called The Atlas of Solar Eclipses 2020 to 2045. But yes, expertise is overrated. They can predict eclipses down to the minute, down to the mile, a century from now. And if you don't find that amazing, I would like you to check your pulse. This hour, let's recap what this all means for us. And let me start by introducing Deb Ross and Dan Schneiderman. Deb is chair of the Rochester Eclipse Task Force. Welcome back.
Thank you.
It is great to have you
here.
You want
me to talk after that introduction?
Absolutely, yes. I've tried to say as much as I can, and then I'm clearing the floor.
That was beautiful.
Deb is here. Dan Schneiderman is here, Eclipse Partnership Coordinator for the Rochester Museum and Science Center, co-chair of the task force. And, you know, they had an awesome crowd there yesterday. Congratulations to you guys. Thanks for being back here with us.
That was wild, just seeing everyone.
Yeah, it was. We loved getting the reports from the field out there. Scott Feibusch, our colleague, WXXI reporter and anchor, member of the task force, creator of the What to Expect When You're Expecting an Eclipse series. And now the rest of your life awaits.
That's,
how are you doing?
That's where that book comes in, Evan.
Yeah, exactly right. Atlas of Solar Eclipses. Where are we going next year? Here it is.
We're going to Spain.
We're going to Spain.
In 2026.
My entire house is going to Spain. Everybody who came in from out of town, we all looked at each other after it
like
and said,
doing
Spain.
Doing it.
See? August 12th.
Absolutely,
2026.
Yes. Brian Koberline, astrophysicist and science writer with the National Radio Astronomy Observatory. Welcome back to the program to you.
Thank you. It's very nice to be back.
Where were you yesterday?
I was east of Rochester in kind of the Massanin area off 31.
Okay, but within an hour or so?
Oh, yeah. No, I was within 20 minutes of Rochester.
So, I mean, we had the clouds, and I'm going to start with Deb and Dan and just ask you, because there's no doubt to me that this had to be a deeply emotional day for you for so many reasons. There had to have been tears in different ways at times because it was finally happening. All of this work, literally years of work that Deb and Dan and Scott and many other people put in, was here.
Yep.
And I don't know how you were feeling, because it hit 3 o'clock for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, we got to broadcast this and wish I were somewhere else. And that just changed so fast. And now I sound like I'm running PR.
Yeah.
But
I know.
But I'm not.
Yeah.
I mean, I cannot believe how much I appreciated that experience, especially when I thought I wouldn't. How are you doing?
I'm okay. You know, I had friends in from all over the East Coast, right? The thing that I was trying to make happen of bringing everybody to Rochester, I had it in microcosm. I told everybody they needed to be with people they love a lot, and I absolutely was. We were at the Genesee Country Village, and it was this beautiful, gentle experience there because I had some people who were crowds people and some people who weren't, and so they were able to wander around. I was on media all day. So I was, you know, on CNN and I was on Fox News and I was on UK Sky News and BBC Radio Business Report and all that. So, and I stopped everything at 3 so that I could go be with my friends and family out there on the Great Lawn. And I was cursing the sky all day, but privately because, you know, I needed to put all this face on. What happened when we had clouds, of course, too, but at the edge of the horizon, we actually got to see the glow,
yeah,
especially
absolutely.
In the south and the east.
Yep.
And they were all colors, like up onto the clouds underneath.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't expected that at all. And all the young people around me were absolutely, completely entranced. And so the nice thing about having cameras on me is that now I actually have footage of our whole group so that I have that from the outside forever. And that having it both from the inside and the outside is actually going to be super valuable in a way that I hadn't thought.
So remind people of a couple things.
Yeah.
How many times have you seen totality now?
This is my second.
Right. And the first time, what were the conditions like?
The first time were glorious and sunny and Missouri, yes.
Okay. So is there any sense that you had, either during or when it was over?
Yeah.
Did you have any relief that what you told us on this program months ago, that even if it's cloudy, it's going to be amazing, that turns out to be true?
Yes, I was really glad.
There relief in that?
Well, so in my own, like, because I looked around and saw the people who had this for the first time and they were so happy, I needed that evidence because I had told people this and I wouldn't know that from inside. I needed to see it from outside. I needed to hear it from people. And I did. And I've kind of stayed off the news today just because, and last night, just because there are some people who are so negative that I'm so tired that it would be too raw for me right now, to be honest with you.
I hear that. I do hear that. And I think that this is a city and a region that sometimes is a little bit of a tough self-image, a poking fun at yourself self-image.
Yep.
And you know, this was more ammunition for the everything sucks crowd. But it turns out that for most people, and again, I will not speak for everyone. I'm sure someone listening went like, well, what was the big deal? And that's fine. That's fine if that's your experience. But I want listeners to understand that someone like Deb is absolutely responsible for a large number of people understanding what this was about and being here, that this region had more buzz, preparation, people in it because literally of you. So
thanks.
There's probably part of you that feels a little responsible. And then you're like, come on, clouds, let's go.
So you're exactly right. And you just gave that words to something that I was experiencing but hadn't put into words.
But you didn't have to wear it. It's not all on your shoulders. And it turns out that it was just awesome. It was so great. So
it really was.
It's okay. It's okay
get
to be emotional.
Get me crying on the air. Come on. Yep.
I just want to congratulate you for the
Thank
work that you did.
I really appreciate it.
For this region. Dan Schneiderman, you guys had an amazing day over there. How did you feel?
Just raw. I had a very similar feeling to Deb of that. It was busy all day. I was helping MC our stage show, which was a lot of fun. Admittedly, we had to go off script because of the clouds of, you know, just we knew the science. We knew that there was even a possibility. But I mean, those mid-level clouds just killed us at that last second.
I describe them as sort of aggressive and taunting.
Yes. That's about, yeah.
Where is the sun? The cloud's like, you will not see it. You will not see it.
I did get that moment with my wife and with my daughter. And I mean, I loved my daughter's reaction.
That's awesome.
I mean, she's only 2. She kept saying, it's dark. It's dark. And I'm like, yes. Yes, kid. Yes, it's dark. And she was like that for almost the entire 3.5 minutes, which was just lovely. And like, getting to spend that moment. I did have to duck away at the very end to, you know, help count us out and thank everybody. But I did get a really nice moment after totality of the core group of us at the RMSE who had been working on this really, really hard. A lot of us up since about 3 a.m. yesterday and, you know, third day of a entire weekend of events. We were all just exhausted. We went and did a private toast and I just broke down into tears and we had these like massive group hugs.
That's great. That's really great stuff.
Still feeling it today. And I probably
sure
will be. And I mean, I will be feeling a little angry at the clouds for a while. I know I need to travel for another eclipse. I need to see the corona at some point in my life, especially now that I have it physically on me. I need to go and see it at some point.
But
I mean, this that darkness was magical.
Oh, it was magical. Yeah. And, you know, I'm thinking about the way that Deb and Dan, Scott, probably Brian, all the conversations we've had for people who've warned us, you know, if you're 99%, you know, 99% is a little deceiving, because when you think about totality, and for a long time I was like, well, what? So what if you're in Ithaca? And by the way, if you're listening in the Southern Finger Lakes, you're like, I stayed home and it was pretty cool. That's great too. That's very cool. I'm not trying to be like the too cool guy. If you weren't in totality, you're nothing. But I understand now the difference, because that darkness was coming in and we're up on the roof of XXI. And the first thing that occurs to us as it's really closing in was like, is this just darkening clouds or is this it? And then it hits and it takes your breath away.
Yeah.
How fast. And then when it came out of it, for a brief moment, I'm sitting there with Mike Black, one of our engineers, and we look to the horizon and it's like, oh, it almost feels like pre-dawn.
Yes.
Except for the pre-dawn became day in about 30 seconds or less. So it comes out of it fast. And that's when we looked at each other and we're like, oh, we're probably in like 99, 98% territory now. And that's why they've been telling us it's not the same.
It's one thing to like show it off on videos. And I mean, I've been using a lot of footage from the 2017 eclipse, but to experience how fast it got bright out, that was just wild. It was almost just like a snap of your fingers and it was day.
Yeah. Yeah. Scott Feibusch and I talked, and you were on the program quite a bit yesterday, but now that you've had time to have probably very vivid dreams and weird experiences thinking about all of this stuff, is there a melancholy that it's over? I mean, like, what's the overriding feeling that you have right now?
It's so many feelings all at once, Evan, because it's, you know, there was so much, and I would never ultimately recommend anybody have a total solar eclipse in their hometown because it's just too much work.
That's the nice thing about this. It's not coming back yet.
It is so much easier to be an eclipse tourist and to just drop in somewhere and be able to move if the weather is bad and not have that pressure. It was a lot of pressure, you know, not just to make sure that everybody in town got the experience, but then, oh my God, I'm here and I couldn't leave even if I wanted to. And I had options. I could have gone up to the Adirondacks. I could have gone to Indiana. We were talking about it as late as a day or two before, but we had a lot of house guests. And it's like Deb says, you want to spend it with the people that you love and you care about. And so, you know, the plus side is we absolutely had that experience, right? I had the thing that I will never get again, which is to be able to say, I can just walk out my door and this is going to happen. And this place where I sit all the time anyway, in the sky that I look up at out of my window all the time, is going to change so suddenly and so dramatically in a way that I will never see again. And if I had been anywhere else, regardless of the clouds, I would have missed that.
Yeah, I'm with you. And so there's two points there. Number one, did you see the response to Mark Poloncarz over in Erie County? Have you seen that?
I haven't yet.
The Erie County executive, Mark Poloncarz, you know, spent a lot of time leading up to the eclipse, appropriately so, talking about, you know, possible traffic, you know, urging businesses that if you can close for the day or give your employees time off, do it, that kind of stuff. Talked about maybe, you know, declaring a state of emergency. That seemed to kind of extreme. They ultimately didn't. But then, you know, an hour before the eclipse, he posted a video from Ashtabula, Ohio. He drove west to get to Ohio, the Erie County executive.
Oh, my.
And he was like, hey, I'm over at a visitor center in eastern Ohio, and it's beautifully sunny. And people in Buffalo were like, no way, dude. Like,
you know,
no way.
I will never in my life judge anybody for trying to get the totality experience.
No, I'm with you.
They want to have. The one thing that I will judge, and I will call them out publicly at this point because I am still incandescently enraged at my friends and family in Fort Wayne, Indiana. The city of Fort Wayne was at like 99.5% totality, 99.7% in some areas. And I was on them for months, reminding them everything we've always said about what the difference is.
Drive a couple miles?
Drive. And there wasn't even traffic. They could have been in totality in 20, 25 minutes. Oh. And certain people, whom I will be angry with now for the rest of my life, honestly.
You gotta let that go, brother.
I had an online work meeting. I didn't bother. Come on. Well, come on.
Well, you know, you're going to have to let that go, Scott. They missed it. they missed it. But the other point I would make before I get Brian's experience here is everybody's talking about the clouds. I mean, this is April. We could have had snow. But yes. even worse, at the end of April, there's a great event on Seneca Lake called the Seneca Seven. 2,000 people show up to run a 7-leg relay race, a 21-leg relay race around the lake all day. And I was dumb enough to run in this thing years ago. And the day that I ran in it, late April, it was 37 degrees and sleet all day. Ooh. It was miserable. Like, my son didn't even want to cheer me on. He's like, no way. Get out of here. It was awful. Right. So it was actually a lovely day.
Yes.
It was just cloudy.
Yep.
So, if it sounds like PR, I'm being honest. I also said yesterday morning I had a feeling of like, when a Bills or a Browns fan wakes up on a day of a playoff game, a feeling of dread that you know something bad's going to happen that day and you just hope that somehow it can be avoided. That's how I felt too.
Yeah.
It just my feeling changed. Yeah. Brian Koberlein, how many eclipses have you seen in totality?
This is my third eclipse.
Third. Where were the others?
So the first one was in 2017, about 15 miles south of my parents' farm. And the second one was in northern Chile, at one of the observatories, La Silla Observatory.
That is an absolute flex, by the way.
Which is
an
absolute flex.
The second one was down in Chile. That is an absolute flex. Were you there literally for work, or did you time it up? Did you chase that eclipse?
I was there for work in Chile, so I was fortunate to have to have the right kind of job to pay for you to go down.
Yeah, indeed. And how were your conditions?
The conditions there were absolutely crystal clear. La Silla is at about, I think, 8,500 feet up on one of the hills in the Atacama Desert. So it was crystal clear, and the totality was as sharp as night and day. That was the most kind of intense experience in terms of an eclipse.
And so, for yesterday, did you get up early in the morning and think about driving east or west, or what did you think?
No, I had some friends come out. It was one of those things where I had driven, 12 hours to see my first eclipse in 2017, and had flown for 20 hours to get to the second eclipse in Chile. And so when I knew that one was going to go over my house, it was like, I have a plan of putting the lawn chair out in the backyard, having a glass of whiskey, and not doing anything for the eclipse but experiencing it. And I got to do that. I hung out with 20 of my close friends, and we all sat around and had a great time. And it wasn't raining on us, so that was great.
Now, you've seen two before. You've seen it with totally clear skies. You've seen it with cloudy skies.
Yep.
I don't want to go so far as to talk about how great I thought yesterday was to say that I don't ever care to see it in clear skies. Sure, I would like that. That would be fun in the future. Were there first-timers yesterday with you?
There were first-timers yesterday.
How did they feel about it?
They have stories to tell. They loved it.
Yeah.
And that's what we're hearing, is we're hearing people tell stories. One of the things I've said before is that, people talk about it's the Great American Eclipse or the Rochester Eclipse. And really, when you have an eclipse that you experience, it's your eclipse with your story. And so everyone has that personal experience. And if they don't have that, then they haven't had their story.
3 minutes and 38 seconds seems a little scant. I would like a longer one. I hear Egypt's got 6 minutes coming up here. Yep. I mean, how long were your previous eclipses?
The one in Illinois was, I think, about not quite 4 minutes, and the one in Chile was 4.5, I think.
It has a settling and yet unsettling experience because something very unusual is happening. So for us, I wonder what your small crowd did, because for us, we're up on the roof and I'm looking over at the High Falls garage and a crowd had gathered there, and there was a crowd at the brewery that I could see, and I could see the crowd at Innovative Field. And when totality really hit, there was this brief moment where you could hear a cheer, and I thought it was going to be more sustained, but then it was like being in a church. Yep. After that. Brian?
It was a very similar type of thing. We were out, on a farm. And so, you could see the patterns of the clouds coming in. You could see people eager thinking that, that because it had gotten significantly darker, that they were at totality, and then it went dark, and then they realized they were at totality. And as people said, the peepers came out, and you could hear them. The farm cat took advantage of the dark to get a rodent, and you could see it, you know, it captured one little rodentia that was off guard because of the eclipse, and you could see her running back after the eclipse with this reward in her mouth. You know, it's like you got to see much more of the nature around that area than you would normally do.
And not a lot of light pollution, right?
Not a lot of light pollution. Yeah. So, you know, my first eclipse was in a park, and it wasn't in around a homestead. And my second eclipse was in the middle of the desert. And so you didn't see a lot of animals. And, you know, one thing I would say with clouds is you can see the patterns in comparison. You know, when you have a perfectly clear sky, all you have in the sky is the sun. And so when it goes to totality, you do see the corona and you do see the dark, but you don't have a lot to compare it to. And I think the specialness of seeing it at home is you're familiar with your weather. You're familiar with your terrain. And when that happens differently in the place that you know inside and out, it's in your blood, that experience is very different, whether it's a cloudy sky or not.
Well said. You want to jump in on that point there too?
I was going to say the reaction just seemed so different. You know, when I was in Kentucky in 2017, which was my first, in case I haven't mentioned that before.
Everybody knows by now.
You know, there was this very celebratory reaction under the clear sky when the moon covered, and it was loud cheers and it was people screaming. And this time, you know, we had 18 or 20 people in my backyard and a couple of dogs, and everybody just got really quiet. And that darkness, I think because of the clouds, I think that darkness just felt so much more profound and so much more intense. And it felt like it lasted longer than 3.5 minutes, which was already a lot longer than it had been. It was 2 minutes and something in Kentucky, and it felt like it just came and went at that point. This really felt like it was lingering. I had time to stand up and walk out of my backyard and go around to the front of the house all by myself. And there was almost nobody. I don't know where my neighbors were, if they were all down at Buckland Park or somewhere else, but there were almost no neighbors around. I didn't hear a lot of noise from any of the other yards on the street. It was just, it was really, really deep and really, really dark. And then to come back the way that it did, it moved me in a very different and probably ultimately equally as profound way as 2017 did.
Was there a cheer, Deb, Dan, where you guys were?
Yes, and it was exactly the same pattern that Brian said. A cheer at the beginning as we finally went down to dark, and then faster than I would have expected, quiet. Mm. And then we also had an astrophysicist in our group. So after about a minute, like, people started asking her sort of the questions about, okay, all right, tell me what's happening now. And like, what, you know, like, so, yeah, it was neat, especially when we saw all the glow around the horizon. And what was that? What was, like, she was answering those questions about why you could see all of the light over there and what it looked like underneath. So, yeah.
What about RMSC?
We had the exact same cheer and then immediate quiet. We did... No, after about a minute or so, like, explain some of the things for people to look for. We actually measured the temperature, I know, from the top of the rooftop of the planetarium. So we, like, briefly mentioned, like, hey, what we encourage people to think about what they're feeling. But that was after that first minute and a half of just, like, let everyone soak it all in.
Well, before I get to some of your phone calls, we're going to bring in some other guests here. I want to ask Brian Koberlein, as an astrophysicist, how is it that it turns out that expertise is sort of fraudulent and that academia is in ill repute, no one trusts experts, and yet you can still know where all the eclipses are going to be. Is it just magic, do you think?
If you want to call mathematics magic.
Oh,
then,
so
then,
expertise is still a thing, it turns out.
Expertise is still a thing.
Wow. I find, Brian, I hope everybody has the same sense of awe that I have, that we not only knew this was happening, we know where the next one's happening. We know where they're happening for. How far out do we roughly know when these?
I think now with computers, it's about 5,000 years. This particular eclipse
5,000 years of totality chasers.
Yeah, this particular eclipse was predicted in the early 1800s. There was a compilation. Someone calculated all of these eclipses.
And the path shifted like a quarter of a mile. So
maybe, but if you think about it, they did all of this by hand in the 1800s.
It's amazing. Mm-hmm.
Whereas 100 years before that was the first accurate prescription description of an eclipse in England. So
amazing. I find that if you gave me all of the information about how to understand the mathematics that goes into understanding future eclipses, and I had to start from scratch and educate, we would not have any clue. For it would take me maybe 1,000 years, I think, to be able to start to understand how it is that you all do what you do. So
to give you an idea,
here's to expertise.
I did
here's
something
to expertise.
I did something a little fun last night, and I updated the Rochester Eclipse website. I don't think I've told Deb this. I have updated the countdown. It is now going to the 21:44 to the minute.
I was almost going to ask. We had house guests who had to leave on a 6 a.m. flight this morning so they could be back in New York. I was going to ask them to take a picture at the airport of the sign
there. I do know
what
the countdown clocks. I had someone run and check them at the RMSC. Since we had a number of countdown clocks, they started counting up. I had no idea this was the one tech test I didn't do. It did the same on the website. And then I'm like, you know, at the end of the day, I have to update the website to the next one.
I love that idea.
Wow.
We should just leave a permanent sign at the airport now counting down.
I think it's great. I think the eclipse has fried our computer out here. So I'm just going to make – here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to grab a couple people who have been waiting to jump in here. Antonio first in Rochester. Antonio, go ahead.
Yes, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah. So my experience was good. I'm going to say that I set myself up because, like you were saying earlier, Saturday and Sunday were great days. And then, of course, today's a great day, too. It was just something that was built up. And then I wanted to see the moon over the sun, like in the movie Apocalypto, right? So I wanted to see that, and I wanted to experience that. But it was cool seeing it darken. And my 4-year-old granddaughter did say, "Is it time to go to bed?" Which made me chuckle.
Yeah.
But pretty much, yes. It was a very cool experience, and I feel blessed to have it. But I was felt left down because of the weather preceding yesterday, and then today. I was just like, "Why? Why?"
Yeah. I definitely hear that.
Experience.
Yeah. Thank you, Antonio. I appreciate that. I think we all hear that. I mean, everybody in this room would have chosen it differently, but the wonderful thing is that it was still as special as it was.
Yep.
So
science doesn't care what you deserve.
Yeah, it doesn't. Sadly, it doesn't. It should. Maybe that's Brian's next intervention. Science actually cares about our feelings. Right now, no.
Science is a human endeavor, and humans care about our feelings.
Oh, that's good. I like that. Let me get Frank in Greece. Hello, Frank. Go ahead.
Hello, I had a wonderful experience at the eclipse. I was at the beer garden on Atlantic Avenue, and my friends were bringing fresh vegetables, and we had a picnic. And I saw the clouds all over the sky, and I said to everybody, "Hey, listen, we're Bills fans. We know how to get disappointed."
Yeah, that is spot on. But what happened, Frank?
What happened was the moon crossed the sun, and for me, it got darker and darker and wetter and wetter, and it reminded me of death, and I have death in my own family. I have to face death very soon. So the eclipse helped. Hmm. The eclipse helped.
Wow. Before I let you go, do you want to say a little bit, not about your own family, but how you think it moved you in a way that helps you with dealing with all of this, Frank?
Well, just the theatrics of it, the light fading, and the cold coming, the rain falling. And after 20 whatever minutes of it, the sun coming back out again, refreshed and renewed, new life. Hmm. And I don't even believe in new life, but new life. And I'm grateful for the experience. I'm grateful for my friends. And I'm grateful. We did not see much white light, but we saw UV light. We saw X-rays. We saw ultraviolet light. We saw infrared light. We saw X-rays.
I'm grateful for everything.
Frank, you know, I don't think you have to believe in new life or afterlife to feel a sense of peace and impact from the eclipse experience, and that's what it sounds like you had.
I am grateful that I live in a community that is deep enough and smart enough and sensitive enough to accommodate a wide variety of opinions and to laugh at foolishness and to make all feel welcome.
Hey, much love to you, Frank. What a great... That's powerful, Deb Ross, isn't it?
That was beautiful. That is the community that Dan and I set out to inspire, and it just worked.
Wow. It kind of reminds me of one thing that did happen on our grounds yesterday. I was not expecting. No, as we just mentioned death, I want to mention we had someone get married on our grounds. We did not expect that.
Yeah.
They just randomly showed up and decided to get married.
Oh, that
the
wasn't
eclipse.
Part of the plan.
No. Nope.
No, same thing at Genesee Country Village. Paige didn't know. She said, I got there and she said, guess what? We're having a wedding today.
And I haven't heard yet from John Beal at Calkins Road Middle School, who did the musical and who was going to Cleveland yesterday because his brother was getting married during the eclipse. And, you know, he was complaining about having to leave Rochester. Lucky him.
Yeah.
How did that all work out for him? I'm sure that was a good experience. I just want to say, Evan, real quickly, too, that I was thinking about my dad yesterday because he was the one who turned me on to science. We watched Nova together when I was growing up, and it was, you know, kind of because of him that I got into having this interest and wanting to do this. And, you know, we lost him a year and a half ago. I had called him after Kentucky in 2017 and said, I can't wait to do this with you. Well,
yeah.
I think there's a lot of people who've been having that kind of experience. Scott, Frank, thank you for that. That's beautiful stuff, man. We're talking about this sort of post-eclipse hangover. And if you're wondering, well, what do I do with these eclipse glasses now, Dan Schneiderman? Mm-hmm. What do you do with these things?
Well, number one, you can still use them. They are great for any sunny day. We're in a period of, we're in this amazing solar period where we can see a lot of sunspots right now. I recommend keeping them at least through the summer. There's plenty of times to use them. We will continue on with our solar observing. But if you don't want to hold on to them either as a memento or to view the sun, we are doing eclipse glasses recycling at the RMSC. And I know that there's a bunch of other locations around the region where we'll be collecting glasses and then sending them off through the Astronomers Without Borders programs to places that have eclipses coming up all over the world. Solar eclipses happen much more often than we think. Totals, you know, are only about every 18 to 24 months. But we want, your glasses are still good. We want to share those experiences across the world. So we'll be collecting them starting tomorrow. Don't come by today. You won't find anyone there right now. We're all taking a much needed rest. But feel free to drop them off, and as long as they're in good condition, we'll hold on to them and ship them off to the next eclipse.
Let me welcome in the co-organizer of A Total Eclipse of the Park. That's Kiki Smith, who is on the line with us now, and want to find out how things went there. Hello, Kiki. How are you?
I'm good. I'm in bed.
You're in bed. I mean, you didn't have to tell us that. I wasn't asking.
I know, but I don't keep secrets. Oh, my gosh, you guys. It's like, you're all up and at 'em. I've been up since 7:15, but I'm just lying here basking in it.
Just kind of, are you kind of fried from it?
Well, yes. I mean, I think I'm also taking the pause right now to reflect on all of the work, all of the hands, all of the hearts, and I just need time to process it. I mean, without that vision that you all know I don't have, I use all those other senses, and it takes me time to like process all these experiences, and I really need a little quiet and silence. Well, that's the same thing. And stillness to absorb it all and let it flow into my body and just kind of name in my head each of the people who made it all happen. And there you are all.
virtual group hug.
There you go. Hey, Kiki, for listeners are just meeting Kiki, perhaps for the first time, Kiki had a rough first experience as a person who was blind with an eclipse and did not feel a sense of connection and was frustrated, and then took a different approach and helped organize this event yesterday for the entire community, not just blind and visually impaired. But it was a way to experience that through different sensations. And, you know, Kiki, there was a lot of discussion for the sighted community about the clouds. You know, I mean, obviously different experience for you. I mean, so in general, how would you describe the experience yesterday?
Well, I can tell you I cried again. Only the last time I cried in frustration, and this time I cried with joy. And I mean, I guess in some ways, the light sound devices from Harvard still detected all of the light change. And there was still like a huge amount of suspense and anticipation while we listened to those tones shift. And they almost like quivered at the moment of transition from one level of light to the next dimmer level of light. And when we hit that final sound of the sort of the crickets and the silence, or somebody else I heard in the crowd saying, it sounds more like bats to me. If you've ever had a bat in your house, you would agree. But I will say it was such an intense emotional experience again. And I mean, I can only imagine, and I will listen later to the live streams of the light sound device use in Texas and Indiana and Cleveland. But for me, that was dramatic enough. I got it. I got that anticipation, the excitement, the awe. I heard those birds, like they were literally calling each other home to their nest as it started to get darker. And I could hear all these like levels of, there were all these sounds that sort of braided together to give me a story about what was happening visually. Not the same. And there is, I think, wow, you guys, great job. There's so many things for so long we've hoped for and anticipated. And Rochester did just, like, I don't know where the traffic was, but I think that's because Rochester did such an incredible job of doing everything in preparation for yesterday.
I have a theory about that, Kiki. There's one thing I do want to say about that, and maybe Deb wants to weigh in too. But I got an email yesterday from a listener last night who checked in to say, Chris said, I heard a small amount of the show yesterday before and after the eclipse. My family and I viewed it at the MAG. We thought totality was awe-inspiring. We are now determined to go to the next eclipse in Europe. In any event, for those skeptics who didn't believe about the influx of folks, my son and his family's experience returning to Westchester right after the eclipse proved the point. People may have trickled into Rochester and the region over several days, but they all left at once to great disruption. They had a 45-minute delay getting on the thruway at Victor. They were rerouted off the highway twice due to bumper-to-bumper delays around Auburn and Binghamton, and just got into the McDonald's in tiny Hancock, New York, on the usually sparsely traveled Route 17 in the Southern Tier before the doors were locked because they ran out of food 3 hours before closing time.
Oh, no kidding.
Wow.
So that is from Chris in Rochester.
That is great. That's what I mean.
Yes.
We did such a great job. That's incredible.
Yeah.
Rochester carried it so seamlessly.
Can I just point out, you know, a lot of people on social media saying, oh, it's going to be like Y2K. The reason why Y2K ends up in retrospect having looked like it was nothing is because there were all of these unsung people behind the scenes for years and years ahead of time.
Yeah. Right.
Tracking down potential problems, making sure nothing went wrong. Same thing with this amazing team here in Rochester, that because Dan and Deb and everybody in their orbit, no pun intended, was there and was working on it, that's why it went so well and why it would have gone just as well.
Where you wanted to go to experience the eclipse. Getting home, different story. They can't control that. The people who are going back to the New York City area, it was tough.
Yep.
But part of the reason it was so empty in the morning was because most businesses and schools were closed.
Right.
People were waiting to go experience. So, of course, and that made sense. It made it more eerie and kind of interesting.
Yep.
But it was a logical result, wasn't it?
It was. I mean, so many talented people worked together for so long to think of everything.
Yeah.
And actually, I'm going to call out Dan Schneiderman here for a second, because what Dan did, so Dan took a mission and he made it a job. Actually, let's thank Hillary Olson for giving it a job. But then Dan took that job and made it a mission. And so Dan wasn't just doing a job. Dan thought of everything. Anytime Dan had an idea for how could I make this better, what could I throw at this, who can I talk to, what who needs to know what, he was the center of that information. Everybody knew if they had a question, they could go to him, and he would, if not know the answer, because he usually did, would be able to connect them with who could. And we had that sense of a community because of that, and that is the power of what we did.
Seamless, Dan.
Did I tell you the time of the last email I answered?
No.
I was answering emails up until about 11 a.m. yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And that's and the only reason I stopped was I had to eat because I was being told, thankfully, by my wife to eat. And I thank her greatly for that. And then I was on stage.
Yep. I'm going to point out something that Dan may not have thought of. The next great American eclipse is in 2045. You are going to be the world's expert. You are going to be Kate Russo. The rest of us are going to be retired, but you're going to be younger than I am
now.
You're
young enough, Dan.
And
sorry,
everybody
man.
Is
going
to turn to you for the whole country. So this is not done for you.
I already know that this is coming. I already have, because my entire job is still the eclipse. I'm still the eclipse partnership coordinator, even though we are post-eclipse. Yeah. I have work to do. I have a lot of documenting. I'm trying to collect these stories. I'm sure in the next week or so, I'll announce ways for us to actually collect a lot of them, because I'm starting to hear a lot on social media, but I need the videos. I need the photos. I want anyone's thoughts written down. We were collecting where people had traveled from on site using physical maps.
Yeah, it's a great idea. And by the way, just two other points for all the naysayers. Like, where are all these people? The Herman J. Wehmer Winery, they had a weekend that was like their busiest fall weekends. And they said that was eclipse traffic. Lento Restaurant in Rochester is typically closed on Sundays. They decided to open on Sunday to see what would happen. They said they did more business than New Year's Eve. And on a typical day, Lento's reservations, 99 to 100% come from four area codes, phone numbers, 585-607-315-716. 25% came from those on Sunday. 75% were out of the region.
That's fantastic.
So those are data points to tell you that it was just so well organized. That's why things didn't fall apart yesterday with gridlock, and that's because of the planning. So it's not because people weren't here. Hey, Kiki, before I let you go, one other note here. I think, obviously, you and I have talked about the fact that the blind and visually impaired community is going to experience this. Everyone's an individual. They'll choose how they want to experience it. But I think you've created a kind of roadmap for this kind of a community in future events like this. I mean, you've done something really, really powerful for Rochester as an entire community, but also for the blind and visually impaired community specifically. And I don't know if you're going to take that on the road. You and Dan may have to travel.
Yes.
When you saw there was a young woman there yesterday in a wheelchair, and Tony Padilla let her play the bongos while the Wombo Kings performed, and you saw her dancing, you know, with us, with our white canes and our guide dogs. It was probably somebody's like, there's going to be an accident. But we had a first aid person, and we never needed to use her. It was so beautiful. And, you know, really, for those of you who are sighted, this is a little bit of what it is like to live with vision loss. It can be disappointing and frustrating, but it doesn't mean it's not worth living and not worth doing together. And that was so cool.
Oh, yesterday. Kiki. My goodness, that is awesome. Go ahead, Scott, real quick.
Before we get into the end of the hour crunch, I want to get a plug in now for people who want to share their eclipse stories. We already have an event that is planned. Thank you again, Deb Ross, for making all of these great things happen. May 5th, out at Historic Gates Hall in Pulteneyville, where Frederick Douglass spoke and so many people have presented, we're going to have a storytelling afternoon, and people will be invited to come out and share their memories and their experiences. And we're going to find some way to document this and preserve it.
Sunday
afternoon, May 5th.
It is my birthday.
Oh, Deb's birthday, yes. So it'll be Deb's birthday party, too. Yep.
You're not supposed
Golden nickel.
It's okay. I'll be 55 on 5/5, and I get to moderate a storytelling of the eclipse. Think about a better present. You can't think of
That's great. Hey, Kiki, thank you. Until our next conversation, thanks for popping in here.
Thank you so much, guys.
That's Kiki Smith.
All of you. I love you.
Much love to you, co-organizer of a total eclipse of the park. Before I bring in another scientist, I've been thinking about the way that people are sharing their stories, and they're, you know, Dan's talking about kids who are 2 years old and they're blown away by this. Brian Koberliner, does this event, is it a blip, and does it kind of people kind of go back to work and back to school, or does this strengthen the connection between your community of scientists and the lay public, and does it increase interest long-term that can be sustained?
Well, I would hope that it connects with a long-term thing, but, you know, as people talk about stories, one thing to keep in mind is that you've experienced this eclipse in your neighborhoods and in your homes, and that connects you to a chain of time. The last time you had an eclipse in Rochester was in 1925. My house was around in 1925. Maybe my house will be around in 2144. You know, who knows? But if you have stories, don't just collect them for everyone, but collect them for your family. Mm-hmm. Collect them from your neighborhood. Cool. Imagine in 2144 when people in Rochester are getting ready for the great Rochester eclipse, and they can go back and they can read stories and hear people talk about their experience and see the reactions that they've had in their neighborhoods or in their homes.
They'll be able to watch your TikToks of the eclipse.
They'll be able to watch TikToks of the eclipse. Yeah. It's the best documented eclipse that we've had ever.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that point, by the way, for your family. Great, yes. Great idea.
And it's another point of sadness, too, that we did not have our local newspaper reporters out there doing what they should have been doing yesterday. I'm sure we'll be talking about that next hour.
Yeah, we're going to talk
about
that.
But that's, you know, this is how we go back. This is how we know that Rochester reacted in 1925 by saying, oh, it was cloudy and we missed most of it. Is because we have those newspaper reports.
We absolutely do. And let me bring in another scientist. Roger Doobie is a physicist and emeritus professor at RIT, fellow of the American Indian Science and Engineering Society. Roger, welcome back. Tell us a little bit about how you spent yesterday.
Yes. So yesterday we also were outside waiting to see what would happen. We had some out-of-town guests, had some chairs set up outside. We put a fire in the fire pit. Because we thought that would be particularly interesting during the total darkness. Mm-hmm. And before and after that time, because it was so cloudy, we paid a lot of attention to the animals. Their activity yesterday was noticeably different. The birds were starting to come into the woods behind our house. I was watching them using my bird identification app, the number of species that we're collecting for the coming event or evening, whatever it is that goes through their systems when an eclipse occurred, caused this unusual number of species to appear and to settle in. They got very, very noisy, and then as it started to get dark, they all got quiet. It was really quite remarkable. I know that Dr. Dessler and his wife decided to go to the zoo, and they were at the lion's cage when this happened. And they said that as it got darker, the lion started prowling around, and when it got dark completely, he roared. You know, so it's just kind of cool to watch, you know, how the animal world reacts to something like this. I mean, it's not just humans. They're also watching this thing and trying to understand and make sense out of things, and they react to it. It was really, really, it forced us to listen and to watch. It was a different experience than we expected.
Did you get any sense of letdown because of the cloud cover yourself, or are you feeling like the experience was special in its own right, Roger?
Well, As a physicist, I was disappointed that we didn't have even the ability to see this because, you know, there are all sorts of really great things we could have talked about as it was happening. But at the same time, I was pleased that it brought us all together, that we all talked and shared, that we all watched, and we had opportunities to teach people. I took part in a conference at the U of R the day before yesterday for educators. We were talking about the indigenous view of eclipses and the importance of it to cultural ceremonies and so on. So there were opportunities that normally wouldn't happen unless you have an event like this. So it still paid off.
Well, Roger, you may have to just chase the next one. Turns out there are entire books on chasing eclipses, Roger.
Yes, and my wife is already talking about Europe.
Ah, so. You know, you're not the only ones. I'm hearing a lot of people say, you know, maybe Spain. Spain 2026.
2026, August 12th to 26th.
But then Luxor, Egypt the next year in August of 2027, if you want an absolute rock-solid guarantee that it will not be cloudy and rainy, Luxor, Egypt, 6+ minutes of totality, August of 2027.
Are you sure it's not going to be cloudy?
You could ask Eric Schneidel for an update. somebody pointed out yesterday when we were talking about this, you could have dust storms. Yeah, I suppose you could.
Oh, listen, whatever you have, it's going to be special wherever you go. That's the lesson from yesterday. It wasn't just hype. These things are amazing no matter where you are and what the conditions are in. Hey, Roger, thank you for sharing your perspective. We'll catch up with you on this program sometime soon, I'm sure, to talk about your perspectives on science and so much more. But thank you, Roger.
Oh, absolutely. My pleasure. Thank you for having us here. Hey, can I make a quick plug?
Yeah.
If any of you have eclipse glasses that you're not going to be using any longer, go to astronomerswithoutborders.org. They have partners, partner organizations that are collecting these glasses, and they ship them to third world countries so that people can watch these eclipses safely. So I encourage you to consider doing that.
Thank you, Roger.
You bet.
Donna in Fairport says, I emailed last year about friends reserving rooms in our house a year in advance. They did come from D.C. and Maryland. Totality was amazing. Not going to lie, the clouds were disappointing, but we took the opportunity of the preceding sunny days to go to Mount Hope Cemetery for a historical figure tour. We paid homage to Susan B. Anthony and Frederick Douglass, visited the Susan B. Anthony House Museum. It was incredible. Rochester has so much to offer. Take advantage of it. That's Donna in Fairport. There were people here, and they were doing it. And they were largely thanks to some of the people in this room. Deb Ross.
Thanks, Evan.
Take a nap.
I'm going to go do that.
Thank you very much for everything you have done for this community. I just want to say, I mean, I know I'm speaking for a lot of people. So much love to you, and we owe you a debt of gratitude.
Thank you.
What else to say? Dan Schneiderman, thank you. Same to you, sir.
Thank you so much. I have to say, this was so therapeutic today.
Well, there you go. Yeah. There you go. Brian Coberline, great to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much. Good
Scott
to be here.
Scott Feibusch, get ready to chase the next one, brother.
Spain 2026. I'm there with Deb.
There you go.
We're going to do it.
Listeners, if you sent emails, called, et cetera, you know, we may end up finding a separate day, and we'll make sure that you know in our show notes where else you can do, whether it's May 5th in Pulteneyville or other places to collect these experiences, because a lot of people are doing it. We got more connections coming up.